Welcome back to the Warren County Radio Bible School. And as we begin the school this morning, we're going to start with our special feature. And that is, we're going to read from the Rockcliffe Review. This is the bulletin that is passed out on Sundays at the Church of Christ at Rockcliffe. And usually it has something to do with a sermon that I would preach the morning that this bulletin is passed out. The article in the bulletin will have something to do with what I'm going to preach. But this one is an exception to that. It is about an event that took place in Warren County and the lessons that we can learn from it. And I think you're going to find this interesting. The title of the bulletin is Whiskey in the Meeting House. Why do we find it ironic that a bottle of whiskey would be found in a meeting house of worship? The answer is obvious. Worship nourishes sobriety. Whiskey nourishes dissipation. They do not go together. The old Philadelphia meeting house in Warren County, Tennessee, was built in 1830. It was used as a regular place of worship until 1960s. After it was no longer a place for regular worship, it continued to be used for special events, like an annual fellowship day. On those fellowship days, former members and friends would come from miles around for dinner on the grounds, and many would return to the building for worship. However, the building had fallen into disrepair, and some were fearful that it could collapse. In the 1980s, Clifford McLean headed up an effort to restore the old building. During the renovation, while taking up loose floorboards, someone found a bottle of whiskey that had been hidden in the floor. How it got there, and how long it had been there, no one knows. Whatever its story, everyone knew that a bottle of whiskey should not be at a meeting house built for worship. Some wanted to save the bottle and put it in the museum building, but someone poured the whiskey out on the ground and broke the bottle. There is a story in the Old Testament about strong drink in the tabernacle. Nadab and Abihu offered strange fire before the Lord, which he commanded them not, Leviticus chapter 10 and verse 1. It was not fire that the Lord had specifically forbidden. It was simply fire he had not authorized. By telling Nadab and Abihu what fire to use, all other fire was excluded. God was not pleased with the priests doing as they pleased in their worship. It was time to teach a lesson to all about discernment between that which is holy and that which is profane. We read in the book of Leviticus chapter 10, verses 8 through 11, Jehovah spake unto Aaron, saying, Drink no wine nor strong drink, thou nor thy sons with thee, when ye go into the tent of meeting, that ye die not. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, and that ye may make a distinction between the holy and the common, and between the unclean and the clean, and that ye may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which Jehovah hath spoken unto them by Moses. The fire Nadab and Abihu used was strange fire. Therefore there went out fire from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. It says in Leviticus 10, verses 2 through 3, that Moses said unto Aaron, This it is that the Lord spake, saying, I will be sanctified in them that come nigh me, and before all the people I will be glorified. This is why we do not use instruments of music in our worship. Instruments were used in the old temple worship, but in the old temple worship is not how we worship in the church. God told us to sing. And in the New Testament, there's no mention of instrumental music in the worship of the church. Mechanical instruments produce music which the Lord commanded not. When it comes to holy worship, instrumental music is strange music. Worship in song, as God directs, glorified God. There's more to this story. Why did Nahab and Abihu use strange fire? Was it a deliberate act of rebellious self-will? Or were they neglectfully careless in their discernment? Perhaps it was more of the latter. Leviticus 10 verses 9 and 10, the Lord said, "Do not drink wine or strong drink, thou nor thy sons with thee, when thou goest into the tabernacle of the congregation, lest ye die. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, that you may put difference between the holy and the unholy, and between the unclean and the clean." It sounds as though Nadab and Abihu had been consuming strong drink, and because of its debilitating effect on discernment, they had been negligently thoughtless about what fire to use for the sacrifice. Alcohol robs its consumers of their discernment. Wine is a mocker. Strong drink is raging. And whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 1. Some try to excuse their foolishness because they were drunk. But that is no excuse. They chose to drink. It is not an abundance of wine that dulls discernment. It's the first drink or two that does it. Bishops are to be men not given to wine, 1 Timothy 3 and verse 3. Likewise, deacons are to men who are not given to much wine, 1 Timothy 3 and verse 8. When it comes to doing the Lord's work, sobriety is a virtue. The danger of strong drink is so great that wise men said, "Do not look at it. Look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth its color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. At the last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. Thine eyes shall behold strange women, and thy heart shall utter perverse things." Proverbs 23:31-33. That does not mean do not see it. It means do not desire it. This is the look of desire. The way to avoid the dangers of strong drink is to avoid the desire for it in the heart. Strong drink is still raging. It is not drinking to excess that is condemned in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 18. It says, "Be not filled with wine wherein is excess." Read that closely. The excess is not in the person. The excess is in the drink. It doesn't enter the person until he drinks it. A bottle of whiskey is a bottle of raging excess. If you find a bottle of whiskey, you would do well to pour it out on the ground and to break the bottle. Well, that was the article in the Rockcliffe Review for that Sunday. I read from the Rockcliffe Review because the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rockcliffe. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m. All are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rockcliffe, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. And what we're looking at in this Bible school are Sunday school lessons written many years ago by the preacher E. A. Elam. And we're currently looking at Sunday school lessons about the life of Christ and the harmony of the Gospels. And we've come to the lesson that he wrote for the Sunday schools of August the 10th, 1924, about the first miracle of Jesus in Cana of Galilee. This is where Jesus turned the water into wine. You know, there are those that look at this and say, "Well, now this justifies us drinking wine. Jesus turned water into wine." And they do not understand or refuse to acknowledge the truth that wine, as the word is used in the Bible, does not always refer to an alcoholic beverage. It is simply the juice of the grape. And we're going to see there's no evidence that Jesus turned the water into alcohol when he turned the water into wine. That is something that people read into the text that is not there. And we will demonstrate that as we go through this Sunday school lesson. Let's look at the geographical notes. It is not certainly known where Cana was in Galilee. In McGarvey's Lands of the Bible, he says that the village may now be called that village Kephar. And Cana is usually regarded as Cana of Galilee. It is about 3 miles north of Nazareth on the road to the lake. And being close to Nazareth, that would explain Mary's familiarity with it. Some suppose the place is called Cana el Galil, 12 miles north of Nazareth is the place. So it's difficult to know exactly which little village was Cana, but we know it was somewhere between Nazareth and the Sea of Galilee. Now, in studying this lesson, we're looking at another lesson from the book of John. This book was written toward the close of the first century. It seems to have been written after Matthew, Mark, and Luke had written their books or life of Christ. John's references to much of these other writers wrote is in collaboration of them. He gives more of Jesus' early ministry than they, but omits his birth and his childhood, his miraculous conception, the visit of the wise men, the destruction of the innocents, the flight into Egypt, the return to Nazareth, the visit to the temple when 12 years of age, and his baptism. His readers would have been already familiar with these facts had they'd already read Matthew, Mark, and Luke. John records only one miracle common to the four, and that is the feeding of the 5,000. But he records 4 miracles that are not mentioned elsewhere. And one of them is the miracle of this lesson, which is the turning of water into wine. John omits the parables recorded by the others. He devotes at least 1/3 of his book to the sayings and doings of the last 24 hours of Christ's life. For instance, chapters 13 through 17 records the facts of Jesus washing the saints' feet, and after the Lord's Supper, his speeches and prayer before his departure from that upper room to go over the brook Kindron, John 18 and verse 1, into Gethsemane. In John chapters 18 and 19, he relates the events of the remainder of the night and the next day, while chapters 20 and 21 give the account of his resurrection and his appearance with his disciples. John, Peter, and James were the closest to Jesus. They witnessed the resurrection of Jairus' daughter, the transfiguration, and the agony in Gethsemane. John is called the beloved disciple who leaned on Jesus' bosom. He and Peter followed Jesus after the arrest and went into the house of Caiaphas. He was at the trial before Pilate and stood by the cross where Jesus committed him to the care of Mary, the Lord's own mother. John outran Peter to the sepulcher on receiving the news of Christ's resurrection, but while he stooped to look in, Peter passed by him and went in before him. John and James were called by Jesus the sons of thunder. John and James desired to call fire down from heaven to destroy the Samaritan village which refused Jesus a night's lodging. In Luke chapter 9, verses 54 through 56, John forbade others doing good work in the name of Jesus because they were not literally following Jesus with the apostles in John 9 and verse 49. John and James asked for the highest positions of honor in the earthly kingdom they thought Jesus was about to establish. But John also wrote much of love, and that does not mean he was not a true, firm, and brave. It is he who says that those who claim to know God and yet refuse to keep his commandments are liars, and the truth is not in them.